Good morning. It's good to be with you all today. And today is December 1. And for me, December is basically the whole month is Christmas time and thinking about the greatest story that was ever told about how God became a man and dwelt among us so that we could behold his glory and not be consumed by the brightness of his glory. So as the way John describes it, the way the disciple John describes it, is that Jesus became, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And he tabernacled with us, or he tented with us. So God, who is a consuming fire, according to Deuteronomy and Hebrews, he would consume us if we were in his presence, in our sinful state. And I think it's out of mercy that he didn't commune personally with Adam and Eve anymore after they sinned, because if he had come personally to them, they would have been destroyed by the brightness of his coming. So God had to speak through people, through prophets and visions and such as that. But, you know, we just didn't understand. Hebrews chapter 1 says who God in sundry times and various ways and manners spoken to us by the prophets in the past has in these last days spoken to us through his Son. So God tented himself with humanity so he could dwell among us and that we could behold the glory of Father and of God and not be consumed. And so I'm going to just enter kind of the first part of the greatest story that was ever told. And Tarsha is going to help me. There's going to be opportunity for us to hear from one of our students. Tarsha has a beautiful testimony. So we're going to interweave that into this story. So there's no one that I can't better write the story than Luke. So I am going to tell the story as written by Luke in Luke chapter 1 and beginning in verse 5. And so there was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias, of the course of Abiah, and his wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and his wife's name was Elizabeth. And they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances, blameless. And they had no child. So look at this again. Now, in the Old Testament times, it was said that, well, you know, if a woman was barren, it was the curse of God. But those people just simply didn't understand, right? Because it said that she and he were blameless and walked in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord. But nevertheless, she was barren and had no child. And they were both well stricken or well advanced in years. In verse 8, and it came to pass that while he executed the priest's office before God in the order of his course. Now, did you know that there were so many priests in those days that it was a great honor to even appear once and enter and do the work of the priest? There were so many priests. It's estimated that you would only have the opportunity once in a lifetime to go to Jerusalem and actually minister in the temple. And this was Zacharias' privilege that month. According to the custom of the priest's office, his lot was to burn incense when he went into the temple of the Lord. And the whole multitude of the people were praying outside at the time of incense. And so he was in the temple in the holy place. And there, verse 11, and there appeared unto him an angel of the Lord standing on the right side of the altar of incense. Now, how often do you think that happened, that an angel of the Lord would actually appear to a priest? It took a miracle. That was miracle one that we're talking about. Okay, and this priest appeared on the right side of the altar of incense. Now, do you think that had a message? He could have been there on the right side. He could have been there on the left side. The right side was a position of favor. So, and people knew that, right? Right side, left side. Right side is a position of favor. And verse 12, And when Zacharias saw him, he was troubled and fear fell on him, even though the angel is on the right side of the altar of incense. And the angel said, "Fear not, Zacharias, for thy prayer is heard, and thy wife Elizabeth shall bear thee a son, and you shall call his name John. And you shall have joy and gladness, and many shall rejoice in his birth. For he shall be great in the sight of the Lord, and shall drink neither wine nor strong drink, and he shall be filled with the Holy Ghost, even from his mother's womb. And many of the children of Israel shall he turn to the Lord their God. And he shall go before him in the spirit and power of Elijah, to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." So John the Baptist's work was to be a threefold work: to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, and to prepare a people for the Lord. And Zacharias, verse 18, "And Zacharias said unto the angel, Whereby shall I know this? For I am an old man, and my wife well stricken in years." Now, if you had seen an angel appear to you on the right hand of the table of incense, and he said, and told you're going to have a son, What do you think? Would you say, "How am I going to know this? Is this time like Gideon to put out a fleece?" Of course, Gideon saw an angel too, didn't he? At any rate, Gabriel kind of answers him with a little bit of consternation and strictness. And verse 19, "And the angel answering said unto him, I am Gabriel that stands in the presence of God, and am sent to speak unto thee and to show thee these glad tidings. And behold, you want a sign? You are going to be dumb and not able to speak until the day that these things shall be performed, because you believe not my words, which shall be fulfilled in their season." Now, how did it describe Elizabeth and Zacharias in the beginning verse? You remember what it said about Zacharias and Elizabeth? "They walked in all the commandments of the Lord and all the ordinances and were blameless." You know, blameless people and can doubt the Lord sometimes, even when confronted with a miracle. And that was the case for Zacharias. So he was deaf and dumb for 9 months. Now you say, how do you know he was deaf? Well, number one, the Greek word used for dumb there also means deaf. But if you were to go to verse 51, where is that? Not verse 51, verse 62 in the same chapter, when they wanted to know what Zacharias wanted to name his son, verse 62, "And they made signs to his fathers fathered Zacharias, how he would have him called. So they were having to do sign language to Zacharias because he was deaf and dumb. So Zacharias received a message from the Lord. And I want Tarsha to share. You can use this microphone. Just share with us. Take time. Was there ever a time where you felt like God sent you a direct message? You know, not that you saw an angel necessarily, but you were given a message directly. Go ahead and share it.
Well, I think the first time, or actually, yes, I would have to say the first time was when I married my husband. I had spent some time in North Africa teaching English as a second language to a very wealthy family there that paid for me to come there, and they wanted me to help with a new school they were starting. And of course, I'd never been out of the country, and I wasn't sure that I should go, and I was working for a company that sent me to Orlando to work to open up all of the cell phone kiosks that you would see in the little Walmarts. So while I was there, I met some Muslim people, and I didn't know a lot about Muslims. I just heard all the things we read in the media and things like that, and they befriended me, and I was working late, and they would invite me over, and over time, the ladies invited me to the mosque, and I wasn't really strong in my faith at the time. I'd been raised in a Christian family, and I'd been raised in a Baptist family, and my father was a deacon, and my mother was a mother of the church, is what they called it at the time. But I wanted something different, and I knew that there was no perfection in religion. So I thought, well, you know, this is a big religion. I'm going to, you know, go there and find out. And so I did, and I had the best time. I loved the modesty between the women. I loved the separation between the women and the men, and I loved how the women were dressing very modest. So even in my 20s in college, I was seeking out modesty in a world that was very unmodest. Is that right way to say that? And so I spent that time there. When I got back, I thought, this is amazing, you know. So I found a mosque locally, and I started to go there, and I learned Arabic, and I was being friends with the people, and it wasn't the harshness that we read in the media, and it wasn't all of that we see online or on television. And so I started worshiping or going to the mosque on a regular basis, and then I still went to my church on Sunday. And over time, the imam would study with me, and then he was like the preacher or the pastor of the mosque, and they called him an imam. And he said, you know, I see you come, and you're single. He says, oh, why don't we find you a husband? And I thought, I don't think I want a husband, you know, and I don't think I want a Muslim husband. And he said, no, it's okay. You know, you just go through this process. And I thought, okay. And I can't really tell you exactly where my mindset was at the time, but I can tell you that, things progressed. And over time, I married my husband, who I fell completely and totally in love with. And, my husband, then we decided that, you know, maybe you should become Muslim. And I thought, okay, you know, I'm in my 20s, you know, so 20-year-olds, this is what happens, right? You just do things that you don't really think very much about. So I had a program scheduled to take what they call Shahada. And Shahada is when you denounce your current religion and you become that religion, you become Muslim. And so I was going to take Shahada. And it was a big deal because in my city, in St. Petersburg, Florida, there are several mosques, and they have those programs on a regular basis, because like Jehovah's Witness and Scientologists and just about maybe all religions, they're out canvassing and trying to get people to come into their religion. And so very often they would have this program. And so my particular time, along with hundreds of other people, not hundreds, many other people, were taking this Shahada. And so I told my husband, you know, that I had gotten a call from a friend of mine. So I'd meet him there. And it was very often that we would go separate anyway. And so he went that way. And just as I was getting ready to leave, I got a phone call from a dear friend of mine. And she said she was about to lose her job if I did not give her a ride. And I said, well, I can't. I'm on my way to take Shahada. And at the time, I was dressed in what they call fular. And it's a hijab. And so the only thing you would see was the round of my face and my hands. And so keep in mind that I only wore that when I went to the mosque. And so I decided I'd go ahead and give her a ride. I wasn't terribly late. And so I said, okay, I have time. So I drove her and she's talking to me along the way and we're catching up on things. And then when I got her to work, I decided there were a few things I wanted to grab out of the store so that I could take to the program and have as refreshments after. And while I was in the store, I grabbed the things that got in line and of course I, you know, dropped her off and everything. And so, I had forgotten my checkbook. That was back in the days when you wrote checks. And so I told the clerk, and remember the days when you left your checkbook in the car and you'd run back out and get in, you're holding up the line. And so I, you know, told her I'll be right back. I left it in the car. So I ran out to the car and I grabbed my checkbook. It was sitting right on the front seat. I thought I had it with me. So I grabbed it and I ran back in the store and my things were bagged up and people were proceeding through the line. And I said, ma'am, where is my stuff? And I need to pay you. And she says, no, someone's already paid for you. And I said, no. And at that time, I had a lot of pride, a corporate person. I didn't really want to take charity. I never liked charity and didn't grow up poor. You know, my family was wealthy. So I just took that as a negative. And today, of course, that's completely different. So give me charity. I'll take it. So anyway, so, you know, she proceeded to tell me that the man down the, that's walking out the door paid for your stuff. So I said, No. And I see this man walking out. It's tall, gray-haired white man. And I said, excuse me, sir. You know, I need to give you your money back. I don't appreciate you paying for my stuff. He's like, no, it's okay. It's okay. I said, no. I don't take charity. I'm not a poor black girl. Don't give me charity. I had such a negative thinking back then. And so I told him I need to get, he says, no. Just take this card. And he hands me this card. And I was, by this time, I was running so late. And I said, okay, fine. I will go ahead and take your card. And I was frustrated. You ever had that experience and you're walking away and you're mumbling, you know, and that's what I was doing. So I, you know, headed out, grabbed my stuff, jumped in the car. And on my way, I get to the stoplight. And this light was so very, very long. So I said, where's that card that guy gave me? I'm going to, you know, I'm telling myself what I'm going to do, what I'm going to say to him and how I'm going to send the money to him or something like that. And I look at the card and it's just this beautiful design on one side. Then I flip the card over and I looked at the card and I looked up at the light before I read the card and I looked at the light and it was still red. So unusual. I looked back down at the card and I was reading it and it said, if you meet me, you've lost nothing. But if you meet Jesus Christ, and you forget him, you've lost everything. So if you meet me and you forget me, you've lost nothing, meaning the man. But if you meet Jesus Christ and then you forget him, you've lost everything. And I froze because I was on my way to the mosque to take Shahada. I was on my way to start my life, even change my name to become a Muslim. And at that moment, I had, you know, I was very, very stricken with emotions. And I decided to just go home. I went home, locked myself in my bedroom. My husband later came home and he explained to me, I explained to him what happened. He was very understanding and he said, it's okay. Muslim men can marry a Christian woman, but a Christian woman cannot marry a Muslim. I'm sorry. A Christian woman can marry a Muslim man, but a Muslim woman could not marry a Christian man. And I thought, why is that? And he explained to me that just like in our Bible, the man is the head of the household. And if a Muslim woman married a Christian man, she would have to follow him and become Christian. But a woman who is Christian can marry a Muslim man because he is also head of the household and she will eventually become Muslim. And I said, well, I don't think that I can become Muslim. So what do we do now? And he said, it's okay. I love you. You're my wife. I want you to stay my wife. You can remain Christian. And I did. For the first 8 years of our marriage, you know, I remained Christian. And I am still Christian. But he became a more devout Muslim. And the time came where he wanted to take Hajj, which is the pilgrimage to Mecca. And that's when he became a more devout Muslim. And that's where my marriage struggled. And again, I was faced with choosing Jesus or choosing my husband. And I chose Jesus.
Thank you. And I'm going to progress in the story a little bit in Luke, and then we'll hear from Tarsha again. Thank you. So again, in Luke chapter 1, We now come to the annunciation or announcement to Mary. And let's see, so that's verse 28. Okay, so it introduces Mary. And verse 28, and the angel came in unto her and said, Hail, thou that art highly favored, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women. And when she saw him, she was troubled at his saying and cast in her mind what manner of salutation this should be. And the angel said unto her, I think we see a repeating theme here, Fear not, Mary, for thou hast found favor with God. And behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus. He shall be great and shall be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God shall give unto him the throne of his father David. And he shall reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there shall be no end. Then said Mary unto the angel, How shall this be, seeing I know not a man? And the angel answered and said unto her, The Holy Ghost shall come upon thee, and the power of the Highest shall overshadow thee. Therefore also that holy thing which shall be born of thee shall be called the Son of God. Have you ever wondered why the different response to Mary? Gabriel responds differently to Mary's question than he responds to Zacharias' question. Isn't that interesting? But the way I see it, Mary's question was really a question of mechanics. How can this be, since I know not a man? And whereas Zacharias' question was really a question of doubt and unbelief. I mean, face it, the father of the nation, Abraham, and Sarah both had a miracle baby. Prophet Samuel had a miracle baby, but they were married couples. There was no, you know, miracle, it was a miracle, but they were married, et cetera, et cetera. But Mary was literally, had never, as it says, had not known a man. And so Gabriel explained, you know, God is going to come to you and the Holy Spirit will overshadow you. So that's kind of the different of the response. So hers was a logical question, and Gabriel explained it for her. Continuing on. Gabriel says, verse 36, and behold, just to give you an idea, is your cousin Elizabeth has also conceived a son in her old age, and this is now the sixth month with her who was called barren. For with God nothing shall be impossible. And Mary said, Behold the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto me according to thy word. And the angel departed from her. So what can we take from Mary's response? You know, if God asks us something, then we can say, you know, Lord, be it unto me as you say. And I'm wondering, Tarsha, is there something, again, in your experience where you felt God was leading you, asking you to make some new steps, and your response was, you know, okay, so be it, Lord.
Okay. Well, this story I really like because it has a much better ending. And I say that because I did love my husband. I still love him today and I miss him. And one of the things that I said that I would do was after our divorce was to dedicate my life to raising my daughter, and I homeschooled her. And, I think most of you can say God really used me and worked through me to do a good job in homeschooling her. She's a great, great person. I could not have done it without God by my side. But I know from that time in 2008, I was seeking and seeking and seeking. I knew that God had a bigger picture for me. I couldn't figure it out. I didn't understand it. I would go to church and I would be bored with a sermon or bored with our Sunday school class. And it wasn't one of the things where I, you know, didn't want to be there. Like I'm looking to be entertained. It was more that I wanted more. And I knew that God had brought me this far. He put me in a life with a Muslim husband and he had taken me out of that with so much knowledge about that religion and about those people and that they're just people like us. But I was seeking and searching more. So I had been working for a company and one of the clients, I would call and he wouldn't answer the phone like after a certain time on Friday and then on Saturday. And I said, what is the deal with you? Why won't you take my calls? And I would have to get this contract finished. And he says, listen, I don't work on the Sabbath. And I said, that's Sunday. I don't work Sundays either. And he says, no, I don't work from Friday after a certain time until Saturday evening. And I said, this is ridiculous. This is nonsense is what I said. And so, I told him at that time that I really, really needed to be able to communicate with him on Fridays because a lot of things come in on Friday mornings. He says, let me send something to you. Do you have a personal email? And I said, no, I don't. I don't want you to send anything to me. He says, no, I want to send this to you. So I'm just going to send it to your work email. And he did. And it was this thing about the Sabbath. And so, after that, we became really good friends. So I'll fast forward because, you know, he would continue to do that. And I didn't understand it. And he sent some churches I could visit. And I visited a couple of them. And I wasn't really, shaken by it. But I was curious. And so I continued on in my path and going to church on Sunday. And I just kept feeling like there's something more. There's something more. Something I'm missing. So fast forward to 2018. In January, I was working for a company, a stockbroker firm, and they had taken on inclusivity. They wanted to include, you know, since the new Supreme Court ruling of gays and lesbians, they wanted to show the company was, you know, like that, you know, really, really supportive. And they asked me if I would support the company, if I would represent the company at the Gay Pride Festival. And I said, no, I won't. And so, and now the old me probably would have said no big deal because, you know, it's no big deal. But again, God was working in me and I've been reading the Bible and I've been trying to understand, you know, should I follow the Bible and what it says or should I just treat it like most people, like a buffet, take a little bit here and there, what I think is good. But no, that was a time in my life that I wanted the Bible to affect my life and I wanted to do what it said, you know, as best I could. And so I told them no again, and then they called me into HR, and they said, no, we need you to do this. And I said, I'm not doing it, and I can't do it, so don't make me do it. And that night, I went home, and a friend of mine, I was sharing it with her, and she's Seventh-day Adventist, and she's a missionary through Light Ministries, and also she works at Living Springs to do some of their classes on occasion. And so I was sharing this with her, and she says, you really need to study more, Tarsha. What does this have to do with anything? She said, you really need to study more and you know, you're going to be attacked constantly. You really need to get to church on Sabbath. You need to have Sabbath worship. She's telling me all these things I need to do. It had nothing to do with what I was sharing with her. I wanted to talk about this problem on my job. And she said, you know, I want you to come up and visit me. And I stayed a few days with her and she fed me all this great food and she told me get off of coffee and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh my gosh, are you crazy? I can't get off of coffee. That's insane. Coffee's good for you. And so I went back home and I had all these videos and she lives in Alabama and I live in Florida. So I drove up and I spent some time with her and I took some time off from work. And then so came back and watching these videos and there's tons of them. I can't put them away. I made the kids watch them. We're all watching them. And the videos talked about the health message. And I thought, wow. Where does this exist? This is crazy. So that night I had a dream. It was kind of like I was on this property with like Little House on the Prairie, like Amish people with a church and a store and houses. And I thought, this is weird. So I told her about this and she says, you're describing Wildwood. And I said, what is a Wildwood? And so she's like, Tarsha, God is really speaking to you. And I said, okay, but what am I going to do about my job? You know, I don't want to do this. And so she's like, give it to the Lord. So then I went back to work, and again, you know, the Pride Festival was going to be coming up in March. So this was like late January by this time. And so I went ahead and I went back to my supervisor and I told her, you know, I've decided I'm not going to do it. And my religion, you know, I'm a Christian and I can't do it because I can't stand there and look as though I'm accepting of something that I'm not. And it's not that I think I'm better than them or anything like that. It's just I'm not going to do it. And so he said to me, Tarsha, how do you feel being a minority? And I said, what do you mean? And he says, well, they're just like you. You're a minority and they're a minority and they're being treated differently because of who they are or what they stand for. And I said, that has nothing to do with what I'm going through. So anyway, fast forward a little bit because I don't want to give you all that drama. That was kind of boring. But anyway, I went back to my desk and I was sitting there. I had not been looking at anything SDA or OCI related, but there was the guy from OCI giving a video on Eden Valley. And it was on my laptop. And, you know, I had in the past searched on for it, but I mean, in the past, meaning in that, you know, few days, but I hadn't had it on that day. So it was still on my computer and I pressed the button and I'm listening and he's saying, will you go or will you give? So I said, well, I'll give. So I started giving. I took out my debit card and I gave and I'm watching all these videos and it was Wildwood and Uchee Pines and Eden Valley and I'd never heard of these places. So then, my boss came over again and she says, you know, we really need to talk to you about this. And, you know, you're on the committee for the gay and lesbians. I said, no, I'm on the committee for religious rights. And she says, well, it's all the same. I said, it's not the same and I'm not doing it. So it became this issue where in the office I was known as the woman who would not accept difference and that I wasn't being inclusive with, you know, following the company's, you know, new program that they were doing. So then I was walking around and I was drinking coffee and I decided that I was going to, watch more of the videos. So I turned on the computer and I'm sitting there and I'm talking to God and I'm asking him, what should I do? And then I watched a video of 3ABN, I think is what it was. And it was an interview with John and Travis and immediately I fell in love with them. I was just like, this is amazing. I heard him speak and I heard Travis speak and I heard them talk about the guests and I heard him talk about what happens in this place. I said, how is this possible that in 46 years I never heard of this and never even knew it existed? And so then I watched the guy again at the OCI video again and he was at a place in Africa, River Springs, or I got the name wrong, but you guys probably know what I'm talking about. It's a place like this, but it's in Africa. And so, and I saw that at the end again, he says, will you go? And it was like he didn't say give. So I said, oh, wow, should I do it? So I called my friend and she's like, you should. And so, I said, well, how will I do it? And I started like crunching numbers. I'm like, okay, how am I going to do this? And at the time I needed to make a decision on my job. And so, my boss came back over and fast forward, maybe a week or two passed and, about mid to late, probably about mid February, I was sitting at my desk and, I really felt that God was calling me, to change. And I didn't know what that was going to look like. So I, decided that I would just resign because I was being pressured really, really heavy at that time. To represent the gays and the lesbians and to accept it. So I then decided that, what would I do? I was just going to prepare myself for this new lifestyle change and I was going to apply to the different programs. And I did. I began to do that. And then I took a little road trip and I went and visited the different ones, Wildwood and Meat Ministries. And my daughter was doing a mission trip. So then I really saw that God was speaking to me and I decided that I needed to make a change. So I started visiting Seventh-day Adventist churches there in my city. And by May, when my daughter graduated from high school, she's homeschooled. I said, honey, I know you've been accepted at this university. I know it's, you know, you're in this program and I know it's great and everything's all set up and you're supposed to start in August. But I just found out about something. Something that I didn't tell you before because I didn't know it. But what if I'm held accountable and you're off at college and I know about this now and I don't let you experience it with me? Will you put off college for a year and go with me to do this missionary program to learn about Seventh-day Adventists and to learn about worshiping on Sabbath and to learn about you know, becoming a better Christian. And she's like, sure, mommy, if you really feel passionate about it, you want me to do it? Absolutely. And I was like, thank you, Lord. Cause that was the one thing. I didn't want to come alone and I didn't want her to be at college while I'm learning this. And so, so fast forward, I was accepted and I'm here. Okay. So I won't give you all the in-between drama to that, but, that's been great. So I got here on campus and I was so excited. My expectations were way up here. And I just really did not allow God to speak to me during the time that I arrived. To be completely honest with you, I was just really just looking at, you know, my expectations and what I thought was supposed to be perfect people, which the people are just like the people I left, but I was expecting something more. And so I did not accept everything easily. And so one of the things I didn't accept was learning about the prophecies and about the sanctuary and about yeah, all the different components that you guys, you know, study that we don't or did not in the Baptist church. And so I began to reject a lot of them. I was calling home and, can you believe this? And is this true? And blah, blah, blah. And so then I went and I heard a sermon at Campion and it just moved me. And so when I was here the next Sabbath at this church, I decided to fill out a card and ask for Bible study and to learn more about baptism. And so, of course, I learned later that John never got my card. And so anyway, that's okay. But I think that that was also important because I continue to wrestle with the teachings. We had the pastors coming over from Campion and other speakers, and I just wasn't grasping it. It wasn't making a lot of sense to me. And I thought, how can this be true? And then the remnant and then the second death and all these things that just didn't make sense to me. And then finally, we had massage class and I really enjoyed it. And so I started asking everybody, would you let me give you a massage? Would you let me give you a massage? And those that were smart said yes. The ones that were not smart said no. No, nobody said no, but some people just never got back to me. So anyway, but one of the people that did was Kay. And, she said, which is Keith's wife. I always call her Kay. I think she just doesn't say anything back. So anyway, it's her first initial, like mine is T. So. Yeah, okay. So anyway, she says, yeah, Tarsha, I'll let you give me a massage. So I was giving her a massage and we were talking and a little bit about this story I'm telling you. And she says, has anybody offered a Bible study with you? And I said, no. And she says, would you like to do Bible study with me? And I said, I guess, okay. And so we began to study and she gave me these, little brochures that we study, use as a Bible lesson. And each day we meet for an hour, 2 hours, and I became very hungry for my commitment to doing the Bible study. And she was so passionate in the way that she related to me. And it allowed me to open up. Now I asked different people about Bible study before, but I believe that it was God's intervention. He wanted me to have that study with her. And so we were studying, and as we studied the first one, it was about, well, I won't tell you what it was about, but anyway, we studied, okay, and then I said, I learned that in class, but this makes more sense. And then we did the next one, and I said, really? Wow, that's what that means? That's what all the armor means, and the shield, and the head dressing, and okay. And so we continued on, and so she looked at me during the one that said death, and I was just floored. And then the sanctuary, well, I may have them backwards, but I said, yeah, we talked about the sanctuary, but I just didn't get it in class. And she said, wow, you're getting it now. And I said, it makes so much sense. And so then she said, okay. And so we continued to study day after day after day. And then we went to the death. And it was a Thursday before she was going to be traveling. And I read this one. And one of the verses was Psalm 68, which completely, I think it was Psalm 63. It completely moved me. But the other one was Revelations 20. And so then I got back to my room that night and I said, this one's not sticking with me. Cause you know, I've, I've had so many deaths in my life, my mom, my dad, my two brothers in the last few years. And so I said, you know, I really want to know more about this. That they're not really in heaven. You know, how can that be? You know, where are they then if they're not? And so, then I decided to reread the lesson over, and I decided to look at some of the scripture verses. But the one that I looked at was Revelations 20, and I began to read it, and I began to read it, and I began to read it, and line by line, when it didn't make sense before, it made every sense in the world. And I began to weep. I cried and cried and cried. And I said, Lord, are you kidding me? This is what you wanted me to know. And so for 46 years, I did not know Revelations 20. And so I have to tell you that, to me, that was worth coming here. And I began to see things differently. So I remember the next morning I told the students, you're going to see a different person. I'm not going to really, you know, respond the same way you might respond to things. I'm going to see a different light in people. You're going to see me laughing and giggling and smiling more because God has just shown me something that I didn't know. And I shared with them at our Bible study, and I said, I want to read this Revelations 20, and I won't read it to you guys because I think that if you will go back, it's a Sabbath, and you're supposed to be like in Sabbath mode until sundown, I think, right? And so read Revelations 20. Promise Pastor John that you will do that. And so, so for 46 years, I didn't know something. And I don't want you to go 46 years and your children to go 46 years and no one ever tell them this truth, because my eyes have been opened to something absolutely amazing. Now, I'm not Seventh-day Adventist. I was born and raised in a Baptist church, but I always tell people, and my daughter reminds me, Mom, you usually just say you're a Jesus follower. It wasn't until I came here that I actually started to think about my denomination. And it was probably because I felt like I had been not given information that I should have been given. And so one thing that's really important to me, and when I came here, is I put my son in HMS Richard School. That's a Seventh-day Adventist school. He could have gone to the school right down the road there, the public school. But I was serious about this new adventure. Like Abraham was called to go to a new land, I was called to come here. And I believe that he called me for a purpose here. And I don't want to spend my time thinking about my own will and my own purpose and my own excitement and my own desires even. I want to know why he called me 29 hours away to a woman who didn't like to drive or travel a lot. And so he took care of me on that trip, and he got me to the place I believe that I belong.
Thank you so much, Tarsha, for sharing this. And I couldn't help but think of the verse in Acts, where Paul and Barnabas had been persecuted in Thessalonica, and they went to Berea, and it says, now these were more, Acts 17:11, these were more noble, the Bereans were more noble than those in Thessalonica, in that they received the word with all readiness of mind and searched the scriptures daily whether these things were so. And so that's so beautiful, you know, and how you search these things. When Jesus promises that if you want to know the truth, you will know the truth in John 7 or 17, one of those. But if anyone desires to know the truth, they will. And we can see Tarsha is an example of those that are out there that are seeking. And God has been working on everyone's heart, but there are many out there that have been responding to God, and he will always reveal himself to those.